You're with Mike Ryan on today's News Talk Radio, TNT. TNT.
Now, the Wuhan Institute of Virology assembled a monkeypox virus genome, allowing the virus to be identified through PCR test using a method researchers flagged for potentially creating a contagious pathogen. That's from the National Pulse. Now, the study was first published in February 2022, just months before the latest international outbreak of monkeypox. That's the next pandemic from the World Health Organization. They can't wait. I can see them out with the syringes. They're already polishing those needles up, getting ready to give you a jab in the ass or the arm. Now, the paper, which was authored by nine Wuhan Institute of Virology researchers and published in the lab's quarterly scientific journal Virologica Sinica, also follows the wide-scale use of PCR tests to identify COVID-19 positive individuals. So that's making the news. A lot of things happening around the around Australia. We have the election, which Labor won, and they will be ruling under their own right, and they have the Greens to support them at the moment. The numbers are 54 to the coalition. They've lost a net loss at this stage of 11 seats, and the ALP a net gain of 5 seats. That's Labor 76. And then we have our beautiful friends, the Greens and the Teals. They've done very well indeed, and nothing is looking great if you don't believe in climate change. So there are a few of the things that are happening around the wacky world of news throughout the globe and also in Australia.
Checking off the boxes.
Established, reputable.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Okay, the Greens have a growing footprint in Australia, undoubtedly. With crazy policies advocated by the Greens, concerning that Australians are so badly informed about the implications of their electoral decisions. Mainstream media is profiting, so does little to educate the electorate on the fraud being perpetrated by the climate scammers and money going to the pockets of bankers and politicians. Now, where do we go from here? Ian Plimer is an Emeritus Professor of Earth Sciences at the University of Melbourne, where he was Professor and Head of Earth Sciences. After serving at the University of Newcastle as Professor and Head of Geology, he was Professor of Mining Geology at the University of Adelaide and has published more than 140 scientific papers and was one of the editors of the 5-volume Encyclopedia of Geology. Ian Plimer has won so many awards, he has to have another big house just to stack them all up. First of all, Ian, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Mark.
Yes. Now, by the way, you have a new book out called Green Murder. Tell us about that just quickly before we get into the debacle with the Greens.
Well, I actually pursued a green debacle in this book, and that is that their policies lead to people starving, not being able to afford electricity, resulting in people driving electric cars, which can only be produced if you have child slave labour in Black Africa. Their policies in the UK have given people choices, and these choices are, do I have a hot shower? Do I have a hot meal or do I heat a room? But you can't do the three of them. And in Texas a couple of years ago, green policies just wiped out Texas. They had no power and more than 200 people died. So it is green murder, and I await with pregnant expectation to see how we're going to go in this. Well, I'm a man. I can
and
get
you
pregnant.
You can. Of course. Congratulations. Can. Twins, or is it just iron ore?
No, it's the twins of stupidity and foolishness.
Well, you know, by the way, were you shocked at what's happened with the Greens and the Teals?
No, I wasn't. The Teals are very wealthy people in inner city suburbs, which are traditionally very, very conservative and where there's a lot of wealth. Now, these people are feeling that their Conservative Party hasn't looked after them. So what they've done is they've contested seats where people on the left side of the Liberal Party got tossed out. I mean, this is the greatest shot in the arm for the Liberals because it makes way for Conservatives to come into those seats. So the Teals, I think, are extraordinarily wealthy, city-based people who have no idea where their food, fibre, fuel and minerals come from. Mm. Yet they want to finger wag and pontificate. They drive their electric vehicles. They go for holidays to Bali or skiing in the US. These are people who got some of the disaffected votes from the Liberals and also got a lot of the idealists. They're basically Greens. And the shift to the Greens, these are people who are disaffected with the Labor Party, and so the Greens had about a 2% increase. But right across the board, people voted against the major parties. The two major parties constitute about 65% of the primary vote. The rest of the people were protest votes and Greens. Mm. We have had enormous unhappiness, perhaps due to the COVID, the crisis of bureaucracy rather than a crisis of a pandemic, perhaps due to the fact that elections now are presidential rather than being on policies. And so we are now seeing the fundamental change in the demography of Australia. Australians are not hairy-chested, suntanned.
I am.
Men living. Yes, I've seen you. I've looked at you in shorts. And look, I just have to say this to the listeners.
Don't scare them off.
Oh, think of the worst possible thing and triple it. But I've seen Mike in shorts, and it is not a pretty sight.
It's Burt anyway, Reynolds. Burt Reynolds on steroids.
Well, Burt Reynolds didn't have a chest that collapsed and bruised the top of his knees. So.
That's very funny.
We've
Thank
got
you.
In this country a demographic change. People now live in cities. People live in apartments. And someone on the 13th floor of an apartment has got a green finger. They have a little herb garden in a pot outside. They've never been out back. They've never had a farm. They've never had to worry about drought. They've never had to worry about dust storms. They're totally and absolutely disconnected from the world out there. And this is what's happening. We now are not hairy-chested, sun-tanned males strutting through the bush and wrestling buffaloes one-fingered and fighting crocodiles. We are wimps living in cities. Mm. Frightened if there's a little virus floating around, frightened if the global temperature over the last 170 years has increased 0.8 degrees Celsius. We are pathetic, and it shows. And so we're now going the way of a lot of other countries where everyone lives in apartments, and I'm thinking of Germany, where I used to live. And in Germany, we have a number of parties, and to govern, they have to have coalitions. So you'll have actually the coalition between the Greens and the Conservatives. We are getting to the stage where we're ungovernable. And Albo's got himself a poison chalice. He's facing high inflation. He's facing high interest rates. Two-thirds of the people out there didn't vote for him. And one-third of people are sick to death of the two major parties. So I don't know how he's going to govern. He will actually get legislation, and he'll only get that by the Greens helping him through and the alleged independents who have formed a party. So it's not a good time to be Prime Minister, and it is quite unusual for a Prime Minister to get a fourth term of government. So what has happened is not unusual. Mm. The times leading up to it have been unusual. And who would want to govern a country with massive debt and with China rattling on the cage and with inflation worldwide taking off, with potential food shortages worldwide and interest rates rising? And the government will be blamed for this. They're probably not to blame, but they probably will be blamed for it.
But I also see the government, though, the ex-government, under Morrison. I mean, there wasn't a whole lot of difference between them and
it was Tweedledee and Tweedledum.
It was, and they're both dumb.
Well, and they don't stand for anything. What does Morrison stand for? What did the Liberals stand for? And I know in my own electorate here, there was about an 8% majority by the Liberal sitting member. He got in by 743 votes. He very nearly got skinned alive.
Really? Wow.
I didn't vote for him because he's complacent. He's arrogant. He hasn't done anything. He hasn't worked. He's always sending me stuff about telling me how good he is and how he's got a dog parked there and a pedestrian crossing there. Well, that's nothing to do with the federal government. That's state and local government. So you have these absolute bedwetters who are meant to be representing us. The quality of the candidate is not very good at all. And those candidates who were of good quality and who were local people got up, such as in the seat of Fowler, such as in Tasmania. We have candidates who can be good, others who can be party hacks. And fortunately, the Teals have got rid of a few party hacks, but the Liberal Party's got to reinvent itself. It's got to forget representing these posh electorates. It's got to look at the average person, the battler. Now, I don't know about you, Mike, but there has been a time in my life when my wife and I went looking for change in the ashtray of the car, etc., so we could buy milk and bread. Now, you've got to appeal to those people. They're the aspirationals. They're the ones who work. They're trying to get kids at school. They're struggling. Their job might be under threat. They're the ones that the Liberal Party have got to look after, because Labor's abandoned them. Labor's dealing with all the posh elites driving their BMW SUVs, and just for show, of course, they drive an electric car.
But I'm just thinking, though, the if what you're saying is right, how do they get so many votes from those people?
Well, you're referring to Labor, are you?
Yeah, to Labor.
Oh, well, Labor's a light green party, there's a lot of Greens that can't, people with green feelings who can't vote for the Greens. It's just a step too far, so they vote for Labor. And a lot of people vote on feelings. They don't vote on information. We're living in a policy-free zone. Labor offers something for nothing. You know, Labor always offers the chance of you putting your hand in someone else's wallet and taking their hard-earned money. And these are hollow promises. These promises cannot be fulfilled. And I think the best way to test someone is to say, well, here's $100. Now, I want you to divide that into X dollars for defence, other dollars for education, others for roads, others for infrastructure, others for pensioners, others for unemployment benefits, others for healthcare, etc. And they will see the problem. The pot isn't big enough to fulfil all the promises that have been given.
They don't like anything that comes out of the ground, do they, at the moment? The ALP, the Greens, or the Teals, it's, if it looks like a lump of coal, it's like, but the country without that lump of coal wouldn't be where it is now. And what I get the impression is that, and just reading some of the stories in the garbage mainstream newspapers, which are clapping their hands, the happy clappers, I just see the that they want to close down these power stations faster than you can say fast. And that leaves us in, it will be up the poo. It will be, if that happens, and they will start to do it. Look at Matt Keane, from the LNP in New South Wales. He wants to put a giant battery and replace a power station with that. So, I mean, we're not looking all that flash, are we?
No, we're not. And there's two things that come out of the ground. One is cow dung, and the other are minerals and energy, which we use to live our way of life. Now, if you want to have a battery run New South Wales, fine. Batteries don't make electricity. They store electricity very inefficiently, and they release that very, very quickly. New South Wales is blessed with enormous amounts of coal, a lot of gas. It has the foundations of a nuclear power station that was going to be built at Jervis Bay. New South Wales has some hydro, which it gets from the Snowy Mountains scheme. And this power blend has worked very well, where you can have hydro and gas for peak load and you can keep the coal for base load. But if you're on a night where there's no wind and obviously there's no sun, how in the hell can Woolies and Coles keep their refrigerators going to stop their food being spoiled? The fundamentals are not dealt with. Batteries will not last that long. Batteries will give you some minutes of life. The absolute fundamentals are not addressed by these people. Now, in our country, we have huge amounts of uranium. We are the third biggest resource of uranium in the world, and we haven't really explored for it after Kazakhstan and Canada. We have hundreds of years of coal, hundreds of years of gas, and great potential for more oil. in this country, if we add up all our energy, we have enough energy to keep us going just for a little while. We actually have 5,000 times the amount of energy than any other person has in any other country. We are blessed with energy. And it is not from the sun, it's not from the tides, and it's not from the winds. It is conventional energy, such as nuclear, gas, coal, and hydro. We are so well off in this country. We're so incredibly rich that we can be stupid and it doesn't hurt us. And I've argued for a long while, and I argue this in my book, Green Murder, that the only way we will get to reality is to have a really serious depression, or in fact a war, or maybe both together. Mm. Something like the 1890 depression in this country, which was far worse than the depression of the 1930s, or a 1930s style depression. But people are too well off. And I know it myself, my own personal wealth has increased enormously since the days 25, 30 years ago when we were ferreting through the ashtray for coins to buy milk and bread for the kids.
Mm, I still do that.
Oh, yes.
But I have no kids.
That's because you're forgetful. That's your problem. And that's because TNT pays you in small coins. They pay you in banknotes.
Well, they pay me crypto, and it's like, no, actually, they don't pay me crypto at all. As our finance department fell off their seats. Look, we're just going to go to a commercial break. Just before we get to that, I mean, we had our, because we've been, yeah, really very positive around the polling booths, and we took our microphones. In fact, we took our microphones to your booths, and this is the background noise from some of those who were voting. And tell me if you think I'm spot on. So do you think?
Well, I think you're on the money there.
I think we are, but just on that note though. Education. I mean, we've forgotten how to discuss something. I mean, the rational reasoning is no longer there. And the climate change issue has been pumped out for the last 30 years, the same narrative, you know, except maybe, you know, we're going to get too hot at one stage or too cold, and then it changed. And now it's just climate change because we're in deep shit. That's what they're telling us. Our rational reasoning or our ability to debate and discuss is almost non-existent, isn't it?
Well, quite, yes. We've had a 40-year dumbing down of the education system. Kids don't know very much. They commit very little to memory. They think they can do a Google search and find out knowledge. You might get information, but that information's often wrong. And we cannot conduct a conversation with people discussing contrary ideas. Mm. That has gone. You're either in black or white. There's no halfway in today's discussions. And it's probably a great thing you don't have kids. You wouldn't want them to be in today's education system. And I look at it from my perspective. It's a great thing that you haven't given this country genetic terrorism.
Thank you. I just got the one. Thank you. I had to think about that, but I went to a good...
Oh, good. Yes, well, that's because you've suffered a poor education system.
No, I went to... No, I beg your pardon. I went to a Catholic school. The nuns were like ISIS. They were dressed the same, and they really scared the crapper out of me.
And so they should have. That's the best way to learn things like Latin and mathematics.
That's
to
right.
To be caned and frightened.
Well, Latin has done me a lot of good in broadcasting. I haven't yet found an audience for it, but I'm sure I'll be able to Dominus a biscuit and stuff like that. Look, we'll come back to you. We're just going to a commercial break. This is TNT Radio.
You should hear what Misty Winston is talking about.
I want to actually talk a little bit about the class divide with you, because I think that, you know, you just mentioned the class war, and we are in, I don't think people recognize it, we are in a class war and have been for some time. The middle class, the working class, we perhaps have been unaware of the fact that we're in a class war, but that's been going on for a long time. So let's talk a little bit about that and the class divide. Well, how do you see things right now? Because I feel like right now there's a lot of distractions being thrown our way to kind of prevent us from noticing the man behind the curtain.
Right. I think people really need to pay attention to what's going on economically in this country. And I don't just mean in reference to inflation. For example, I talked about this the other night. Bill Gates is actually buying farmland in the United States, a lot of farmland. And there was a woman that came on my show about 2 weeks ago, and she was telling me that Bill Gates is stealing water from her town.
Misty Winston on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
St. Joseph's Indian School is much more than a school for Native American children.
It's like a family. Classes are fun here. I am learning about my culture.
Since 1927, St. Joseph's Indian School has provided children the education, healthcare, and support they need to succeed. To help give our kids brighter futures, learn more at stjo.org today.
Hi, this is Christina Ricci with RAIN. Every 2 minutes, another American is sexually assaulted. If you or someone you know has been sexually assaulted, you are not alone. Help is just a call or click away through the National Sexual Assault Hotline. Please call 1-800-656-HOPE, that's H-O-P-E, or visit rain.org, that's rain.org.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Telling the truth is the only mandate we believe in. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Now, Ian, I have a new song that you should be singing along. This is it.
It's easy being green when green is all there is to be.
So, I didn't hear you singing.
No, I was vomiting, I'm sorry.
But it's and it's amazing how the newspaper, we can now see what news.com.au and the whole News Corp mob are alike, and you can see all the newspaper, all the TV channels and Sky News. They're all saying that, you know, that Australia was so aware of the impending climate catastrophe on the horizon. That's why they voted for those wacko parties. But tell us the truth about, I'm trying not to laugh here, but tell us the truth about this impending climate catastrophe that's on the horizon.
Well, that theory doesn't seem to work, because people who voted for the National Party, which is basically a rural party, or rural socialist party in many ways, their vote actually went up. They didn't lose a seat. And the Nationals represent a lot of farmers. They're very much aware of weather events and perhaps these extreme weather events. I think that's a story being spun by the mainstream media. Mm-hmm. And we know the stories they've given us on things like COVID and trying to frighten us with us and all sorts of things. And this is where an education is very important. You have to critically analyse and think about everything. Now, that story probably sells newspapers, and probably people say cheer and fantastic, and I'll continue to buy this newspaper or look at that television station. But it just isn't true.
Now, look,
just isn't true.
I actually did very poor at school, but I did very poor in math.
I can see you've used an adjective as an adverb. I can see that.
Thank you very much. Because you're a highly educated person. But look, Australians don't really seem to connect the dots, do they? Why they're paying so much for their energy at the moment, and the Albo is saying that, you know, you'll be paying way less under his government because they will embrace green energy. Because I was really bad at math, could you just tell me, you know, just you're my teacher. Tell me how ridiculous the thought of paying less for energy under a green policy is. Just pure fantasy.
It's unrelated to what's happened in the past. We've had a doubling of electricity costs, prices in Australia that the consumer pays. That is because we've had a huge amount of renewables put into the grid at unusual times. If we want to have a country with even more renewables, as Germany, as the UK, and as Texas shows, the power is going to cost you more and it's going to be far more unreliable. Now, if you're running a foundry and are just about to pour a lot of molten metal into a mould and all of a sudden the electricity goes off, you've lost millions. It doesn't add up. But this is the normal sop that the politicians give us. They tell us that things will be better under them. I would like, in 3 years' time, to hold the politicians to what they've said. And, you know, I'll bet parts of my anatomy that electricity prices will not fall in the next 3 years.
Mm. Just what about industry? I mean, sure, there was the that would say that we can, instead of producing goods or just goods using unproductive manufacturing, and we had the so we could import all of our goods. So instead of making a car, we would bring that in from overseas and all that sort of stuff. If industry, what we have left, is put under the pump, and we rely on importing. Looking at the last 12 months of supply chain issues and other countries not producing what they should, do you think we're in a spot of bother in the oncoming years?
I have absolutely no doubt. You cannot stop exporting coal and iron ore, which gives us revenue, because we use that revenue to buy imports. We don't have a manufacturing industry in this country. It's just about gone. We don't have a car-making industry. It's just about gone. So if we want to buy something, then we have to generate the wealth to do it. And we generate that from selling things to other people. Now, there's a wild card in there, and that's the exchange rate. The exchange rate is fairly low. If it gets even lower, that means that we will be selling goods on the market and getting good money for it, but we'll be paying a hell of a lot more for anything that's imported that we buy. Whether we buy a car or whether we buy a widget or some machinery, it is going to cost us. So we trade with other countries. That is the way we balance our budgets. And if we want to stop trading in the commodities, which are the greatest money earner from this country, then we're going to have to learn to be breatharians and just live on air, because we won't have anything else to live on.
That's right. And I think the if you look at the end game for a lot of these the parties and the agendas of organizations globally, it's what they want. They want us to rely on the government totally and wholly, that we're given our pocket money each week, and our houses are paid for by government, as they do.
Own nothing and you'll be happy. Yes.
But it's not as if it's going to happen. It is actually happening, isn't it?
Oh, very much so. And we have now in Germany 300,000 people a year who cannot pay their electricity bills. They go foraging in the forests for wood, for heating and for cooking. Now, Germany is an energy-rich country. It's a G20 country. It's incredibly wealthy. Yet they have pushed a lot of their population into the poverty that they had 500 years ago. The same is happening in the UK. And it might not happen here because we are incredibly wealthy. It will take some time. And that's why we need something where the prices go right through the roof. There will be shortages and people will say, well, how did we get here? And you want a one-sentence blame, but that's not going to work. I think in this wealthy country, we have to suffer a lot before we can understand how you turn something from the ground into money. I come from a different generation. My childhood was in the 40s and 50s. This was post-war. It was frugal. Neighbours helped each other. Neighbours had relatives who had died in the war. Everyone was in that together. But we have lost that sense of community. Mm. And we lose that sense of community when we live in a big apartment block, or we get a bit paranoid. We have big gates on our houses, and we don't have neighbourly contact at all. We don't have street parties any longer. We've lost contact with other people. We've lost contact with ourselves. And there's only a certain amount of money you can spend on yourself. And we need, I think, to have the sales trimmed in this country.
When I grew up, which was some time ago, a bit after yourself, but I recall that the quintessential Aussie was one that was, you know, that had a bit of an opinion, but as they would say, didn't give a bugger at the end of it, because, you know, have a beer, have a barbecue, get over it. I mean, even in when I was had my license, it was quite common to have a traveller in the car, or you could do it. You know, there wasn't all the rules and regulations, but the Aussie was always that Aussie, bit of a larrikin, worked hard, played hard at times, but it was something that was admired around the world. What is there to actually admire admire about the inverted commas quintessential Aussie now, because we're way different from the last 30 years, 40 years ago, aren't we?
Oh, yes, very much so. We do have the quintessential Aussies out in the bush. You go to, say, Quilpie or Mount Isa or anywhere in the bush, you still have the quintessential Aussies. Mm. They still have a traveller. I've never had a traveller in my life because I'm a bit uncoordinated and it's a real sin to spill something. But we do have them. But the cities now are where we have a generation of people who've never had hardship, they've never had a recession, and then there are a large number of immigrants who have come into the cities. These people, in some places, have come from very, very hard circumstances, and all they're concerned about is growing their family economically. We have lost the threads of the community, and we see that. There are fewer and fewer people belong to political parties, fewer and fewer people that go to church, fewer and fewer people that actually do community work, volunteer work. And that's because the society now is all about me and bugger anyone else. So we are having a fundamental demographic change in Australia. There's nothing you can do about it, Mike. There's nothing I can do about it. We just ride with the waves.
How do we get the message out? Because I was talking to some of our political allies before, commentators and stuff, and they were talking about, how there is, for the minor parties, there's not the air for them to get the message out. No oxygen, so the mainstream media doesn't do much at all. And the same thing with climate change and I mean, just the truth-telling. It's not there anymore. And for you to come out and sure, you've written some great books and you're a very intelligent person and you're very lucid and you enunciate beautifully, but there aren't that many opportunities to do that with mainstream media, and which also then leads into the education system. How do we get cut through? How do we cut through the crap, as they would say, and get the truth out?
Look, it's very hard. I've been cancelled from two universities. I was to give a talk in Hobart a few weeks ago. It was actually organised by the Catholic Church, and two venues wouldn't have me on the premises. We had to get a third venue before I was allowed to talk. I have a sneaking suspicion the various newspapers have got me cancelled. I have no problems getting up and talking to people. In rural Australia, I can talk to people anywhere. So what is happening is we're having censorship of alternative views, which means that we can't have a discussion, which means that there is no consensus. There is just a view which doesn't allow any discussion. That's not consensus. That's despotism. Mm. Again, that derives from a 40-year salami approach of whittling down the education system. And again, it is very, very hard to reverse that. The left has, for 40 years, been working on our education system. Every pillar of society, be it the church, be it the study of history, be it universities, be it critical thinking, they all have been attacked, but they haven't been replaced by anything better. So again, I think we have to get serious times, and people will say, well, how the hell did we get here? This was once a very wealthy country. Mm. Now, we know why it happened in Argentina. We know why it happened in Venezuela. And we can tolerate a lot before people will ask that question. So I can see the only solution is an economic crisis. We can't change the education system from the bootstraps up. We've got teachers who have been through that education system and have already been indoctrinated. We've got teachers' unions that want more pay for people, yet we see our education standards are now about the same as those of Kazakhstan. Mm. I just think it's got to hit the hip pocket, and it's got to hit it very, very hard indeed.
And that's only a... that's just around the corner. I can't give a time, but I mean, if we keep going the way we are, you can't keep writing a check out if you ain't got the bucks in the bank to cover that check. We often talk to people about their thoughts on the future. I mean, I think if you're looking at probably the next 6 months, maybe 12 months, probably 12 months more than six. The country's going to change a lot, I believe, because we just haven't got the dollars. You'll shut down important industries that are that keep the country going. You'll place an enormous strain on the grid sector or energy, because they're going to start winding back all the coal stations. You're going to have a very unpleasant time in Parliament, because there'll be the Greens demanding, or the Teals demanding, you know, X amount. Where do you see us heading for the next 12 months? And after that, the slope becomes even slipperier.
When we look at debt in this country, our local government, state government and federal government debt plus personal debt is in the order of $2 trillion. That has to be paid back. One way of reducing that debt is to have massive inflation. So I see we are going to have massive inflation, and inflation goes with high interest rates, and inflation goes with unemployment. So that, I think, will be something that will happen. I remember the times when my wife and I were trying to buy a house. This was in Paul Keating, 17.9% interest rates. It was a struggle. So that's the first thing, that I think it is looming very hard. I don't think our current government, the Albanese government, has got the experience and the knowledge and the intellect to be able to say, well, how are we going to get out of this? And their attempt to get out of it will be to print more money and to give away more money with their various schemes to keep everyone happy, and that is an inflationary measure. So we're heading for inflation, and inflation does slow down economic growth, it slows down employment, and it makes life difficult. So I think that's pretty sure that's going to happen. In terms of the grid, power stations, etc., we need capital to build a new grid if we want to have electric cars in the cities. We're already in debt. Where's that money going to come from? If we shut down a couple of coal-fired power stations, a couple of the big ones, 1,600 megawatt stations, then we're going to start to feel it. And the state that I'm in South Australia, where we're blessed with numerous wind turbines and solar panels destroying agricultural land and a battery that'll provide us with electricity for 5.5 minutes, our electricity actually comes from Queensland. It comes from Queensland coal. And so if a Queensland generator closes down, those at the end of the grid, like poor little me here, will suffer. Now, I have anticipated that problem. I've got a 12.5 kVA generator on the side of the house that's plugged into the gas mains. It comes on quite regularly. Why does it come on regularly? Because I live in South Australia. Why does it come on regularly? Because South Australia's decided to live off sea breezes and sunbeams with a little bit of a battery tucked away there to top it up every now and then. And the battery, basically, I mean, it's $100 million for a battery. If you look at the cost per megawatt hour, then the costs are horrendous for the sort of power. And who pays? Well, poor muggins, through my taxes and through my electricity bills.
Because Albanese suggested that in his run-up to becoming the Prime Minister, suggested that his government would, at that stage, would provide solar panels or panels to provide the electricity to charge your electric car. And unfortunately for him, he said that'll be done in the evening, and we've still yet to work out whether lunar panels work. But do they work, or is the guy just...
No, Mike, you've got this one seriously wrong. There is one country in the world that generates solar power at night, and it's Spain. By God, they're incredibly clever. And what Spain has is a subsidised renewable system, and the boys have worked out that when it's dark, if you have a gen set and fire floodlights onto the solar panels, you can generate electricity at night, and the subsidies are so wonderful that you can actually make a profit. That's where we've got to. It is so stupid. We can get effectively about 6 hours a day of power out of a solar panel. Now, if people then want to charge their electric vehicles off that stored solar, what this means is that grids in suburbia cannot handle it. And you've only got to have three or four people in the one street trying to charge their electric vehicle off the part of the grid that's 240 volt, which has come down through transformers from 415 to 240. And what happens is your neighbours suddenly have the lights dim or unable to cook their meal, unable to have heating or air conditioning, unable to watch their favourite quiz show on television. You've only got to have a couple of cars in the street to do this. And if everyone tries to do it at the same time, you'll end up with the situation that England's got, where you are not allowed to charge your EV vehicle in the early evening. You've got to put it on at 3 o'clock in the morning, or you've got to put it on between 9 a.m. and 3 p.m. when it's parked somewhere. So I would have thought that the system is becoming so asinine and so complex, it might be better just to use solar power that's compressed into coal and been around for a few hundred million years. And it's a very, very efficient way of generating electricity. But then again, who am I?
That's right. When, what would you know? I mean,
would I know?
But isn't it interesting? That's what the media would have people, their readers or the listeners, or this is mainstream media, believe. They would have them believe that, what would you know? Like Peter McCullough in medicine, what would he know? And yet they forget the facts, don't they? And they attack the individual and try and rubbish that individual instead of just looking at the facts and the whole truth.
I think, Mike, you're being too kind. Most journalists are illiterate. They have the literacy of someone who cannot read and write. Mm-hmm. And I'm referring here to scientific literature. Literacy. Mm. They don't know the basics of how you convert one form of energy into another. They don't know the basics of chemical reactions that involve carbon dioxide and releasing oxygen. They have the scientific literacy of someone who basically can't read and write. Yet these people are not operating as journalists giving a synthesis of all the different views. They're actually in there as activists. Most of our journalists now are not journalists. They're just activists who have a job in journalism, and they prosecute their activism on the news and by telling us that black is white. Now, I don't have a problem with opinion programs, if you know it's an opinion program, but a program that's meant to be fact, like the news or like certain current affairs programs, no longer can I listen to them. And I haven't listened or watched or appeared on the ABC for more than 20 years. Why would I?
It's your ABC, though. It's your ABC.
Oh, yes, the one I pay for that doesn't represent a diversity of views. The one I pay for where if I do something on television, say with Channel 9 or with Sky, there's one, maximum two people on the set. Mm. If I do it with the ABC, there's 25 people on the set. There's someone to polish my shoes, there's someone to brush my hair, someone to say what a wonderful fellow I am, someone to give me a cup of tea. You go into an ABC studio, it is absolutely incredible. I know what your studio is like. I've been there.
Yeah, and a wooden bench and a bike to pedal.
You didn't mention the broken glass you've got to walk over.
That's
and
right.
The dripping acid that appears on your head. your studio is frugal for a very, very good reason. The ABC studios are full of people wandering around doing things because they're spending our money. They don't have to generate money through advertising. They don't have to generate money by having great programs. They can do what they bloody well like, and they do.
Exactly. Now, on that note, we'll go to a commercial break, or a pretend commercial break. This is where we pretend to make money. Ian Plimer is my guest. This is TNT Radio.
It's finally happened. A major medical journal has published a dissent of COVID policy, calling it, quote, one of the most manipulated infectious disease events in history characterized by official lies, unquote.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
The Journal of Surgery Neurology International published an April commentary by neurosurgeon Russell Blaylock. Blaylock was scathing in his criticism of the COVID lockdowns. He explained that for the first time in history, medical treatment protocols were being formulated based on not on the experience of physicians, but on individuals and bureaucracies that have never treated a single patient, citing Anthony Fauci, Bill Gates, the CDC, and WHO by name. He also warned that we'll never have a return to normal, and warned of a great reset that has been designed to create a new world order. Bets are being taken as to how long the journal will be allowed to keep this commentary up. It's finally nice to see doctors, medical professionals speaking out against COVID tyranny. For the Morano Minute, this is Mark Morano on TNT Radio.
Hi, Gemma Simon here from the Newcastle Jets for RAD. Playing any sport means setting the right example. And it's not just about how players focus and behave when they're on the field. It's also about their actions and behaviours off it. That includes things like drink driving, drug driving, and driver distractions. No one can perform properly if they're under the influence or distracted. So make sure you make the right decisions when it comes to getting behind the wheel of a car, and you'll definitely earn respect for it.
A message from RAD.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
Researcher Elizabeth Woodworth finds the mainstream media often confuses misinformation, which is unintentional, with disinformation, which is deliberate. Dictionary.com states that compared to misinformation, disinformation is a relatively new word, first recorded in 1965 to 1970. It's a translation of the Russian word desinformatia, in turn based on the French désinformer. In English, the prefix dis can be used to indicate a reversal or negative instance of the word that follows. Disinformation, then, can be understood as reverse information or anti-information, specifically created to deceive and misguide other people. The Oxford English Dictionary describes disinformation as the dissemination of deliberately false information, especially when supplied by a government or its agent to a foreign power or to the media with the intention of influencing the policies or opinions of those who receive it. Given these definitions, it is curious that partners of the Trusted News Initiative have identified a scattered online public as the source of intentional disinformation.
Instead of putting a cracker under a politician, why not some TNT? Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Good idea, Ian.
Yes,
good idea to put a cracker. Maybe some TNT, I reckon, just a short fuse, run for the hills.
Well, in this country, we have very few people. They cling to the coast. Some of us who have lived in the bush a long while can easily run for the hills, and we would survive.
But you live in a very leafy part of your area. Actually, do you have any grass there?
Well, currently I'm in Adelaide.
Oh, you have plenty of grass there. They usually smoke it.
Oh, yes. But I'm off to the outback first thing tomorrow. And that's where there isn't grass. And that's why the cattle and the sheep eat saltbush, because there's no grass.
Yeah, they always used to, when I went to school, they had a sign on the, it used to be a sign at the front, keep off the grass, and then they put it in the classroom. And it was a terrible, terrible time. Those nuns, the lovely, lovely people, but they did resemble ISIS. The result of the election, was it inevitable, or what could have played out to change the results?
Oh, I think these things were set a long while ago. I think on the 1st of November, when our Prime Minister was at the Glasgow COP conference and talking about net zero of November, when our Prime Minister was at the Glasgow COP conference and talking about net zero and enacted a net zero policy, that was the end of him. And those of us that might have voted for him went to the minor parties. You can't have our Liberal Party being Labor-like, and that's what they were.
Mm. Yeah, it was a pretty poor campaign, and he was a bit wishy-washy, and I thought ScoMo lost the plot. But really, at the end of the day, there's not a whole lot of difference between him or his party and Labor. I would argue also that, in fact, they could be worse in some ways. If you look at state levels with Matt Keane, he's the pin-up boy for all the Greens. I mean, as I said, he wants to put a battery there, replace a power station, drop a battery in, and then Bob's your uncle for 2.5 minutes or something.
So exactly right. Just enough to say, I think I'll make a cup of coffee, and you turn the jug on, and by the time the battery runs out, the water's tepid.
Not for me. I have percolated. But that used to be percolated coffee if you were a bit elite. But for me to percolate my coffee, I don't think 2.5 minutes is long enough. So it's iced coffee or tea for me. Hey, there are many.
Well,
in
I
our...
normally have one cup of coffee a day, but
one.
I've just finished a sec. Yeah, but I've just finished a second one because I'm on air with you. Normally, I wouldn't do it.
Thanks, but you need a helping hand. Actually, I used to drink 40 cups a day once.
Oh my God! No wonder your eyes out in stalks and you dribble and you got very strange knees when I've seen you in shorts.
And body odor. Don't forget the body odor.
It's all coming together now.
Well, like my hair. I'm sure my hair at this stage was a bit like Don King, but who knows? If there are many in our societies, renters, homeless, and families with children who are finding it hard to make ends meet. Do we not care about people who can't afford necessities and can't afford their heating bill?
No, we don't. Our Teals and our Greens don't care at all. They don't live that sort of life. They've never met any people like that. They don't do what a lot of people do, is open up a food or soup kitchen and help those people. They don't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
I can remember when in 2020 I was living for a short time in Adam Bance electorate. I couldn't get over the amount of dirt there, the amount of filth and graffiti. And there were food kitchens, and that is in the Greens electorate. They don't see these things. They don't want to see them.
Yeah.
Whereas I think the conservative side of politics, and that's the right wing of the Labor, and the centre-right in the Liberals, are very much concerned about the human state, are very much concerned about human dignity.
Mm.
And it's the de-dignifying processes that the Greens and the Teals are involved in that destroy people. For example, the Greens want to stop live sheep exports. Now, if they do that, are they going to take responsibility for farmers who commit suicide? Well, yes. They tried to stop live cattle exports, and this just destroyed family properties.
Mm.
They don't care. And even if they have the information, they just don't care.
That filth you were mentioning before, that was the headquarters, by the way, for the Greens. So I just got a call to say, look, stop highlighting their the best points about them, because they are. They're a filthy bunch, I think. What do we do to ensure that people are not brainwashed by mainstream media and government?
I think we have to keep talking under wet concrete. People do listen. People will say, yes, yeah, these crazy blokes on TNT radio years ago, I remember. And you do win, but it just means it's a very long period of time.
Mm.
If you're silenced, you have lost the game.
Mm. Do you think that I had a conversation with Jason Olborne before, who ran with the United Party, Australia Party, in the seat of Paterson, and he got thumped, and he was surprised at the at how low the vote was for him, because they actually thought they were going to get a lot more. It would show you that the vote for the Greens, the Teals, and the Labor Party, that the donkey vote was way up, because they just voted for a bunch of donkeys.
Yes, well, I have a friend who was number one on the Senate here in South Australia, and he was the Liberal Democrats. He got about 2.5% of the vote, and I would have thought that most of that is donkey vote, which is tragic. People don't think, they don't know the electoral system, and in fact, to Pauline Hanson's credit, she spent quite a bit of time trying to educate the community about how to vote, how to use preferences, how to vote above the line in the Senate, how to vote below the line in the Senate. Most people don't know. Most people don't care. And voting has become a little bit of a drag for people. Now, I rather like going and voting because there's sausage sizzle there. I can have white bread, which I don't eat bread at all, but I can have this wonderful gooey white bread that sticks to your mouth. You can have a
magnificent
sausage that's dripping covered in national drink, and then I can have all these onions with it.
Oh, excellent. That stand-up win from you.
That's terrific. I love onions. A bit of garlic would have gone down well. And one hand to hold that, one hand to hold hold a fermented fluid, and You can vote many times and often.
That's right. But and after the onions, you'll have the whole polling booth for yourself. But I'm just thinking, though, the because you're talking about the sausage and the white bread and stuff. I thought you were talking about my favourite restaurant on the Gold Coast, which is Bunnings. I just love their sausage sizzles. They're delightful, aren't they? But again, that's the real Aussie comes out, helping the community.
Well, yes, and these sausage sizzles were used to raise money for a local footy team or charity or whatever. I always support them.
You do indeed, even in your leafy part of the world, and there is no leaves or grass. But one day we were almost going to drive through your backyard one day, but we've decided to go through civilization instead. Ian Plymouth.
Well, you can always camp at my place. I've got a place there where you can get a good dose of lead poisoning.
Excellent.
I've measured the lead on the building and in the soils. The highest amount is 19.6%. We could sort you out very quickly.
I'm sure you could. And there's some great holes there too, and I could probably disappear. Ian Plymouth, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me, Mark.
This is TNT Radio.